I don't know if this is... Okay, good. It is. Good morning. I'm extremely grateful to be here. We stayed in Jackson last night with Sarah's family, my wife. Her family is from Jackson there. Her parents just moved to Africa indefinitely. And so her brother has the run of the house that they still have there. And so we come down and we stay with them quite frequently. I went to Fried Hardeman here, and I was here for a long time. We were not only here for my undergraduate, but then also for my graduate degree, and then I worked here in student retention, and it was an incredible time. And coming back, everything is so different. In fact, I've never worshipped in this building the way that it is right now. And when I look around the campus, everything has changed so much. And I know as you go through the construction, things look ugly for a long time. We love new things. We love to see things better and fresher, but we don't like the ugly process that we go through. I remember when I was here, I worked doing landscaping, and so I did a lot of some of the bushes and things that you see now, probably the ones that are dead. And as we went through, I would remember a lot of people saying, "Man, these bushes that are all planted in front and they're not blooming and they're dead and they're we just wait. They're gonna bloom, and then when they do, it's beautiful." And I know all of the construction going on, everything is gonna look so incredible, so great. Speaking of dead bushes, I've developed a habit of killing them. We, in the front yard, me and my wife started pulling out some bushes. We had a lot of them in the front, we decided we wanted to get rid of a lot of them. And they're really hardy bushes, and so we didn't have to do a whole lot to them. We didn't really ever water them. They survived there on their own. But we wanted to pull a lot of them out in order to see the house a little bit better because they were a little overgrown. So my dad, we had some fun. My dad brought over his truck and his chain. We yanked them out, and that was a lot of fun. And the boys, I have twin little boys, 3 years old, and they loved watching that through the window, watching us yank the bushes out of the ground with the truck. And but I took a couple of them, and I thought, you know what, I can put these in the backyard. We have this little area in the back around our back porch, and I'm just going to put them back there. So I dug a hole in the back, and I put them in there, and I put the dirt back on just like you're supposed to. And we had new bushes in the back. They're dead. I pulled them up the other day and moved them to the back. And I didn't understand because my dad said, "Well, you got to water them. And I know this stuff, but I just, didn't want to or just forgot. And they're in the backyard where I can't see them anymore, so I forget. But you'd think, well, they're in the front, and I never watered them in the front. So I pull them up, I put them in the back, in the ground, just like they were in the front, and they should stay exactly how they were. But they're not. Now they're dead. Why? Well, in the front, whoever put them in the beginning did water them and watered them a lot. And they grew, and the root system that they had, now they were pretty sustainable because they had a great root system and they could survive off of the natural water that they got. But when they were moved to a new location, they needed to be watered again in order to supplant themselves into a new system of roots to be watered. I say that because when I came to Fried Hardeman, my faith had been inherited by my parents. I got my faith from them. And while I believed those things, and while I trusted in those things, and I loved going to church, and I loved participating in activities, etc., and yet all of those things were watered for me. I had this root system of people, a youth group, a church, different preachers who encouraged me, my family, etc., all who watered my faith for me from the outside and created this system where my faith could grow. But when I was moved to a new place, when I came to Fried Hardeman, those things went away. And in many ways, I never learned how to water my faith on my own. I never learned how to build my faith by myself. And I assumed that it would just keep going the way that it had all along. It didn't. It did not. I struggled in my faith. How does that happen to a Bible major at Fried Hardeman? Isn't that automatic that a Bible major at Fried Hardeman's faith is just going to grow by itself? No, I struggled profoundly because many of the things that had been taught to me, I had just taken and I had never built on my own or investigated. And I saw my time here, because you can catch this syndrome as a student at Freed Hardeman. This, I go to a Christian university and I have Bible classes that I go to, and you can allow that environment to be to try to replace the basics of what actually water and grow a faith. And you can believe that just being in this environment will grow it for you. I know that because I did. I know that because I know a lot of students who do that. And when we do that, it's dangerous. See, Freed Hardeman can be one of the greatest things for your faith. It could also be one of the most dangerous places for your faith, depending on how you utilize it and see it. You tell me, what are the basics that keep a faith from dying? Study. Okay. What else? Prayer. Practice. Community. Yes. Fellowship. See, these things, you hear them, and they're not revolutionary, are they? They're not. They're not revolutionary things, and they're not things that you think, well, you know, we got to come up with some, or Jeremy's going to present us with something it's going to be some sort of magical thing that might help us to grow our faith in ways that we didn't know. No, things that help us grow are the basics. What's revolutionary is our discipline to put those things into practice and to make sure that those things continue in our lives. We have study, prayer, worship, community. I would suggest things too, like accountability. We'll talk about some of that. Church family, sharing your faith. And I want to look at, don't have time to look at all of these, but I want to look at these things that keep your faith alive. And again, especially the things here at college, but all of these things apply to all of us. So whether you're in college or not, the things apply. We often quote, there's one of my dead bushes. No, that one's not mine. I found it. 2 Timothy 2:15. We quote that verse often. Somebody quote it for me. 2 Timothy 2:15. Yeah, study to show yourself approved unto God. And so that knowledge that we long for, the knowledge that we read about, it's not just knowledge for knowledge's sake. Because the following verses and the verses before that talk about a lack of knowledge leading to a moral decay in our lives because of the dangerous applications to faith in life if we don't know the Word. You look at 2 Timothy 2. Verse 14, it says, remind them of these things, charging them before the Lord, not to strive about words to no profit, to the ruin of the hearers. Be diligent to present yourself approved to God, a worker who does not need to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. But shun profane and idle babblings, for they will increase to more ungodliness, and their message will spread like cancer. So it's not just knowledge for knowledge's sake that we study, but the fact that if I don't know something properly, I can't properly apply that to my life. And it leads to ungodliness in that application. If I don't know something, there's no way that I can properly put it into use. How many of you know who Sir David Brewster is? David Brewster was ordained as a minister in the Church of Scotland, and his first sermon was also his last sermon. He was so nervous that he determined he would never, ever do it again. And so they said it was a worse day for the Church of Scotland, but it was a great day for science because he went back to his original love for the science of optics. And he invented something that has dazzled us for a long time. He invented the kaleidoscope. The kaleidoscope is incredible. I love looking through them. It says just at the end of it, a ton of broken, shattered, colored glass that when you spin it has a myriad of different images that you can see and patterns and colors. The author Mark Batterson observed that the Bible is pretty kaleidoscopic. It's an interesting way to look at it, that you can look at the Bible and you can read it at different points in your life, and it will speak to you in different ways, and it will mean different things because of your experiences at that time in life, because of your goals, because of your dreams, because of your struggles. The things that you read that you have studied before, you see them in different ways. It's always the truth of it never changes, but the way that it applies to your life and the way that it helps you constantly has new patterns and new things that develop. The Bible never grows old. The Bible in our study constantly applies to our lives. A faith that doesn't include a regular engaging of God's Word will be a faith that slowly dies. It definitely will not grow. Why is it that we don't always value and use the Word of God? The world creeps in, okay? Complacency, yeah. We think we know better, yeah. I think in some ways, having it so readily available, we take it for granted, right? It used to be chained to a pulpit, and it was so much different for them, and they craved it in that way. And I have multiple Bibles, and because of that, you know, we take for granted and we don't always study. You know, you would think as a minister, you know, well, that's what you do for a living, right? You study the Bible. But even as a minister, you're tempted to use the study for your sermons and count that as your personal devotional time and learning with God. And it's not good enough. It's not. It really isn't. And I don't always do as well as I should at that. It's something that you struggle with, that finding time to sit down with the Word of God and read it for your own use, read it in order to grow closer to God. I'm not suggesting that we have to be PhD theologians to live the Christian life, right? There's always room to grow. There's always room to learn. And on the other hand, though, I submit that we usually take time to learn the benefits of far less important aspects of our life. Our faith is more important than the stock market or sports center or how we make money. It is the foundation of our lives. I acknowledge that there are a lot of things in the theological basis of some of our beliefs that can be really difficult to understand. But if we take the time to learn our investments, if we take the time to learn the entire roster of sports teams, we take the time to learn our jobs and our hobbies, the majority of our faith should be at least as clear to us as the other important aspects of our lives, especially if we have been Christians for a long time. Speaking of time investment, studies have shown that little more than 90% of Americans own a Bible. That's impressive. That's awesome. I'm very proud of that fact that 90% of Americans surveyed own a Bible. But the studies reveal that we're not always using them the way that we should. Bible studies reveal that the majority of Americans, fewer than half of Americans can name the first book of the Bible as Genesis. Or that a third can correctly identify Jesus as the source of the Sermon on the Mount. And that most people thought it is Billy Graham. A George Gallup poll found that, according to the studies, it seems as Americans we revere the Bible, but we don't read it. And there are a lot of reasons for that, but the Tyndale House Publishing Survey revealed that 64% of Americans say the reason they don't is because they don't have enough time. Not having enough time is only a comforting rationalization until we decide to be honest with ourselves about the fact that we make time for the things that we care about. If I say that I love my children, but I don't spend any time with them, I'm not fooling anybody. In fact, the studies have also shown that the average American claiming to be a born-again Christian spends an average of 7 to 10 times more hours a week watching television and surfing the internet than spiritual pursuits, Bible study, worship, and prayer combined. Now, I realize that financial and work and health and other situations sometimes temporarily rearrange our priorities and rearrange what we can do with our time. But we make use of our time, and over time, over the long haul, we can determine a great deal about our true loves through our use of time. If I claim to love my kids and my family again, I don't spend time with them. You know better. If I claim to love God, I claim to love His Word, I want to grow closer. The Bible directly relates knowledge of God's will to proper use of time. Look at Ephesians 5, verse 15. Ephesians 5:15. Well, most of us are familiar with this verse, but I think that 17 adds a special insight to it. It says, "See that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time because the days are evil." So we talk about redeeming the time, we talk about walking circumspectly. But then verse 17 says, "Therefore, do not be unwise, but understand what the will of the Lord is." See, proper use of time is directly equated here with knowing what the will of the Lord is. Perhaps one of the most startling studies, startling statistics, is that 90% of Christians surveyed who said who didn't have a very strong knowledge of the basic questions of the Bible also answered yes to the question, "Are you familiar with your faith?" See, the dangerous part of that is the same situation that the Hebrews writer dealt with in Hebrews 5, verses 12 through 14. Hebrews 12, verses 5 through 4, or excuse me, Hebrews 5, verses 12 through 14. The Hebrews writer says, "For though by this time you ought to be teachers, you need someone to teach you again the first principles of the oracles of God. And you have come to need milk and not solid food. For everyone who partakes only of milk is unskilled in the word of righteousness, for he is a babe. But solid food belongs to those who are full age, that is, those who by reason of use have their senses exercised to discern both good and evil." He says, you ought to be teachers by now. And then he goes on to say, we have to go back to the original principles of faith. We keep having to circle back to these things. You ought to know more by now. You ought to be able to teach. And the reason you ought to know these things is that those who have knowledge can discern good and evil. They have their senses exercised. And so the issue is that one of the most dangerous parts of the statistic of believing that we are familiar with our faith when we're not is that when we think we know something, we're unlikely to see the need to improve. And like the Hebrews writer indicates, proper knowledge leads to discerning of good and evil in life. If I can't explain what a particular biblical concept means, it's a very real possibility that it is not incorporated into my life. How many of you have some sort of feature on your car like OnStar, some sort of service? Not many of you? A couple of you? Yeah, I have one called DadStar. And I'm kidding, but it's really what I use. I call my dad. My dad can fix almost anything. My dad knows how to do it. I broke down many times, and I have called him and said, "Dad, I don't know what's going on." And he'll say, "Open the hood. Look at this. Look at that. Do you see this? It's moving." And I'm looking around like, "Are you watching me? Do you see what's happening?" Like it's like he knows exactly what's there and can tell me what's wrong as though he were there watching me. If you have any of these kind of things on your vehicle, you know the things that they offer. What a sad thing it would be to know all of the thing, or to have it and not know the services that it offers you, and so not use those things. Imagine if you broke down and you did not know that you could call and have gas or have somebody come get you, and so you walked 10 miles to the nearest gas station. And then imagine that you're there and you call and pay for a tow truck, even though you could get one through your service. And then as you get back on the road, you stop at a hotel and you pay full price because you didn't know that their service offers you a hefty discount at a lot of places. And then you're late to the place that you're going because of construction, while if you had paid attention, you can get up-to-date construction alerts through this service. You see, you spend all of this time and all of this energy and waste so much because you didn't know what this service had to offer you. And so what a shame it is to have the Bible and the things that it can do to lead us to a life of godliness and save us so much time and energy and effort in living our lives in ways that destroy it and don't provide fulfillment and peace and connection with God. What a shame it is to have it and not know what it has to offer. And not know the things that are here to benefit us. Faith apart from knowledge dies. Imagine the same dynamic if you went to school and you graduated from college and you knew nothing about your major. Maybe you're just really good at taking tests. And so you would pass a lot of tests, but you came out not knowing very much. How useful will that be for you in life? What about your employer? When you get a job, and after a couple of years, you still know nothing really about how to do your job well. Will that be acceptable to your employer? Instead of knowing the full extent of our beliefs, a lot of times we define our faith based off of cherry-picking well-known verses instead of studying them in context. The dangerous part of that is that you can literally use the Bible to justify anything. Over the years, people have used the Bible to justify terrible things. The infamous Ku Klux Klan had an opening and closing prayer that included the incredible claim that the living Christ is the Klansman's criterion of character. I would laugh if that were not so tragic. The Klan is the antithesis of the living Christ. And yet the verses that can be pulled out of their context have been used to justify those activities. We can do that in our lives. We can end up living a faith however we want that does not benefit us, that does not benefit other people around us, that does not lead to salvation, because we've studied the Word only in the places we choose, without seeing it in its context. Ignorance is not bliss when it comes to our faith. The prophet Hosea proclaimed, "My people are destroyed from a lack of knowledge." Chapter 4, verse 6. Let's move on to a second source of spiritual water that keeps a faith from dying. Where are my Happy Days fans? Anybody in here? I know it's an older show, but I'd still watch it. No, you've got a couple Happy Days fans. Okay, but how many of you are at least familiar with Fonzie, the Fonz? Okay, all right. Even if you don't watch Happy Days, you know the font. I used to dress like him when I was a teenager, and like 2 years ago. And I was, but I used to dress like him, and I thought it was so cool to wear a leather jacket and a white T-shirt and slick my hair back, and everybody was looking at me like, this is not the 50s. What are you doing? But I dressed like him, and I thought it was cool. And you know what was really uncool of Fonzie? He could never admit he was wrong. You remember that? If you watch the show, he would always say, "All right, I was," and he couldn't get the word out. I was not right. And that's always what he would say. He'd never say the word wrong. A lot of us feel the same way, right? It's difficult. How many of you have a difficulty admitting when you're wrong? Nobody? Okay. Do you see the irony? Do you see the irony? No, we do. We have trouble. I have trouble admitting when I'm wrong. I have trouble taking criticism sometimes. And there are things we're better at excusing than we are at admitting. We're even worse sometimes at admitting we need to do better at something, not just that we do wrong. When it comes to serving God, that we could always do better. One of the areas that we talk about doing better that is expressed a lot is our communication with God. Every time that I've looked at a New Year's list or some sort of New Year's resolution that has any sort of spiritual component to it, right there at the top is always the I need to pray more, or I want to pray better in the coming year. That's always one that we talk about. I can't count how many times I've heard somebody say or said myself, I don't pray enough. It's a pretty common thing we talk about. I once heard a guy say that he wonders why we don't sing Sweet Minute of Prayer versus Sweet Hour of Prayer, because he'd never prayed for an hour. And I'm not telling you that you need to pray for an hour. In fact, sometimes we feel the pressure to pray longer, even though that's not always necessarily what we need. Maybe we should pray with more frequency if we don't, but the problem itself is not necessarily that, but rather sometimes the quality of our prayers. My favorite illustration for this is the use of the cell phone. This is my cell phone here. It's not an iPhone. I got away from the iPhone. I don't really know why. I just wanted to change. But you see, with this phone, I can do a lot of things. I can tweet some stuff on here. I'm just looking at my home screen here. I can Instagram some stuff. Is that how you say it? I don't know. I'm kidding. I know stuff. I'd like to make fun. I can do some stuff on Facebook. I can take pictures with it. I can check my email with it. I can listen to music. I could call someone on it if I wanted to. Or I could just do all the other things I do with it. But I could actually call someone on this telephone if I wanted to. But do you think I worry how much I use my phone? You think I sit around sometimes and think, I'm not using my phone enough. I need to get this thing out. And no, I don't. If anything, I worry about how much I use my phone. I worry that I use it too much. You think I feel obligated to use my cell phone? Do you think I feel bad when I don't use it enough? Of course not. Why do I use my cell phone so much? I use it because of its value to me. I use it because I understand how well it helps me to communicate with people. And because I understand its value, I use it because it helps me to accomplish my daily tasks. A lot of times we see prayer as a religious obligation. And when we talk about, I need to pray more, it's this burden. It's a burden to feel like we have to pray more. I hear sometimes people say about some religions, they're extremely religious. You know, they pray five times a day, multiple times a day. But many religious prayers are recitations and chants. They're memorized, and it's an obligation. Do you think that Jesus prayed from obligation? Do you think he prayed because he felt compelled that he wasn't praying enough? I don't think so. Not the way that we see Jesus pray. You know, when the disciples asked Jesus to teach us, Lord, how to pray, you know, what's interesting is that they pray. They know how to pray. In the Jewish system, they know how to do this. They have to do this. But in many ways, it would be different than how they saw Jesus pray. And so maybe the indication here is teach us how to pray like you do. Because Jesus' prayers seem to be so much more. He was there with the Father. He wanted to be speaking with the Father. He craved to be talking to the Father. The fact is that more is not always better. Like the phone issue, I think if we learn to pray better prayers that impact us and bring us closer to God, if we see the value of prayer and how it helps us in daily life and how we need it and use it, then we will naturally pray more because we want to experience that. Let me ask you, because I find this an interesting thing, and I like to know how other people do this, is what helps you connect in prayer and separate it from just being a ritual? That I struggle with that. What helps you? Okay, looking at nature and thinking of God. Yeah, I love to walk around in nature and just look and bask at the beauty. It's one of my favorite things to do is just take a look around and find some place where I can sit down and worship. What else? Yeah, okay. Our abilities, the running, the walking. What else? Working? Okay. You know, something that was suggested to me one time that I've been using that I really, really like a lot is that I had heard this suggestion and I practice it because I love it. It's awesome. I start by reading scripture and then I respond to it in prayer. So you respond in kind to whatever you have read in Scripture, and you talk to God about whatever that is and move into prayer. The focus of the prayer is what you have encountered in the Bible, and a prayer is a response back to Him. For example, yesterday morning, I started reading in the book of Joshua. And in Joshua, reading in chapter 1, you know, I read through the passage that God asked Joshua to be strong and courageous. And then I began in prayer and asked God for boldness and thanked Him for being with me wherever I go. And then in chapter 2, we read about Rahab. And then from Rahab, you see that she had counted all of the things that God had done in the past as her reason for faith. She says, we have seen all of the things, we have heard all of the stories, and so we are afraid and we want to serve your God. And so I thank God for all the times of the past where I've seen Him work in my life and use that as faith in today. You see, if you have trouble starting a conversation with God, let Him start the conversation and then respond back. And as you do that over time and you listen to what He has to say and respond, you can make a habit of getting to know God better, and then the talking gets easier. Let's move to another facet right quick. That keeps faith from dying. And it's a level of spiritual accountability that we adhere to. How many of you want to admit you don't take criticism well? Is that a lot of times accountability, that issue, I don't either. I have a lot of issues I don't want to talk about. You? And I would rather bury those negative things than talk about them, but it's not helpful. It's hurtful. And Satan would like us to bury those issues because, number one, they will kill you if you do. And number two, they help encourage other people. through our weaknesses, we help other people, and he doesn't want that to happen either. We lift the Apostle Paul to divinity sometimes in the way that we talk about him, but we look at him and all of the struggles and challenges he dealt with. In 2 Corinthians 12, he lists his thorn in the flesh, and he says, "It was given to me, lest I become conceited, lest I become prideful." How willing are we to admit our struggles? Because if we don't seek accountability from other people spiritually, our faith will start to diminish. Because it's difficult to see all of the things going on in our lives from the inside. We need somebody from the outside looking in. If all of the people you hang out with do not feel the need periodically to shake you down, shake them off. They're not your friends. At the end of your life, the people you admire the most will not be the people who always told you what you wanted to hear. They'll be the people who told you what you needed to hear, even though it was painful in that moment. Find those people. Seek those people out. Every Christian needs to give permission to at least one or two other Christians to push and press and look into their heart on a regular basis. Somebody who doesn't buy your press. Somebody who can see straight through all of your facade and can be honest with those things. We're running out of time here, so I'm going to move to this last one. You know, when Charles Darrow invented Monopoly, they was turned down because the Parker brothers said that it had 52 fundamental errors for what a board game should be. And one of those errors was that technically you could go round and round the board and never actually play the game. If you never bought anything, if you never did anything in Monopoly, you could just go round and round. Let me suggest to you that the same thing can happen in Christianity. You can go round and round the board of life every single day and never really play the game and never get involved. And at Fried Hardeman, and as a college student especially, you might be tempted to say that you're in this time where you're in like a prep stage. I gave myself that excuse. Yeah, I'm in a prep stage right now. And you are in many ways. So I can wait to get involved in church life, and I'd use a church buffet mentality and just jump around wherever I want and not really get involved and not really bed down and not really put myself in a community. And because of that, you know, I use things like Moses. You know, Moses had 40 years of preparation before he, so you know, this is where I am right now. Jesus had 30 years of preparation before his ministry, and so, hey, I can use four years here before I actually dig in and get involved in my faith. The problem is that prep time is not idle time. What if Jesus returns before you graduate from Fried Hardeman and decide to work on a real faith? We make plans, we mark calendars, we fill schedules. Making plans doesn't purchase time. Marking calendars doesn't secure days. Filling schedules doesn't guarantee their completion. We get up every day. We do the same thing a lot of times. We go round and round. We work, we play, we eat, we sleep. We do it all over again. And it's like we're all waiting for something, aren't we? The world is moving towards something. And if you don't know what you're waiting for, it's dangerous because you'd be waiting for something in vain. Jeffrey Canada grew up in the South Bronx, and he said, "I'll never forget the day I heard that Superman did not exist." Because he had a terrible, rough life. And after this, he said that his mom told him, he just started crying because he was waiting on someone to save him. And Superman didn't exist. Waiting on Superman to show up is a failed mission because he's not real. Are you waiting on something that doesn't exist? What is the one thing, the one moment you long for more than anything else in the world? What will be the culmination of your life? The moment where you can say, "I've done everything I need to do here. I want to start living for God now." We scramble around for meaning and peace and happiness, but if we're waiting for those things to come after we graduate from college and get the degree, or after we get the next promotion, after we get married, after we have kids, after we retire, we're waiting on Superman because it doesn't exist in those things, no matter how good that they are. It exists in living righteously. It exists in giving yourself to others. It exists in a life of God that we were created for. Don't delay putting into practice the things that build your faith and think it's going to stay where it is until you are ready. It won't. You know the broken window theory of criminology? It says that disarray causes more disarray. And the theory is that if you have a crack in a window, right, it just keeps getting bigger and bigger. If you leave a crack in your windshield, it's just going to keep growing and growing. And it was tested by a psychologist back in the 60s who took two vehicles and he put them both on the street. One of them he just locked. The other one he took the license plate off and popped the hood. After a day, that car that the hood popped and the license plate was taken off was completely stripped. It was his theory. Disarray creates more disarray. And so as a twist to the experiment, he went and he broke a window out of the other car. It was up on blocks by the end of the next day. In your life, faith will do the same. If you decide to leave the things that you struggle with in your faith, you decide to leave it where it is, where it's lacking, and hope that it will stay there until you're ready, it won't. It will only get worse, and it will die. I know. If it is the case that you're dealing with those things, please don't wait to put into practice. And if you still struggle with some of these things, or you're still curious about more ways to build your faith, we can't talk about all of these things today. Take advantage of where you are right now. I'm speaking to you as a college student. You know, you go to Bible classes, and sometimes it just feels like this obligation for you to go. Sit at the feet of these people. Don't waste the time you get to sit at the feet of these people who have sat at the feet of Jesus in order to prepare themselves to help you. You will regret. I've never heard a person who left Fried Hardeman who didn't say later in some form or fashion that they missed, here you go, that they missed chapel. The majority of people that I've heard who loved Fried Hardeman in any way, who complained about chapel, missed it. They also regretted all of the Bible classes they didn't pay attention in. Take advantage of what you have here. Thank you for your attention.